pull up, get it. Live. Yeah, what's up? This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though. Right
here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dola White Podcast.
Episode 97 now of the Dola White Podcast. My guest today, author of the new book, Meltdown, Discover Earth's Irreplaceable Glaciers and Learn What You Can Do to Save Them. Anita Sanchez, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right, so your book, it's for young people, correct? It's I saw it. It looks... would you call it a children's book or just like a youth book?
Well, I think it's correct on a lot of levels. The illustrator is wonderful and she did such beautiful, dramatic illustrations of the animals that live on glaciers. I think a five-year-old can begin to enter into that world. It's really intended for kids, say 10, 12 and up. They can begin to get into the harder issues, the science of it. And I hope adults will enjoy it too. I always think if you really want to understand something, go to the children's section and, you know, read a kid's book about it because that explains the basics.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you write it for the youth because you've given up on adults on this subject?
Well, it's going to be their problem, yeah. The next generation in the not too distant future. So I think they've got really a vested interest in it.
Yeah, and I wish that more adults cared more about this issue like yourself. So I guess we'll start there, really. What is the number one thing that you think people need to know about the glaciers and about climate change that just continuously either gets ignored or the messages get mixed up, or I guess some outlets just flat out lie to people, correct?
Yeah, there's been a lot of disinformation and flat out lies, partly because, you know, oil companies don't want us to stop driving gas-powered cars. But the thing that I really want people to take away from the book is that it's important not to look away. The thing that's going to absolutely doom our planet is that if everybody just says, oh, it's too depressing, I'm just going to, you know, go binge Netflix. So I'm hoping that this book is engaging enough and interesting enough that kids will start getting interested, getting excited, and thinking about the topic. There's no easy answers. I don't have the answer to solving climate change.
Right.
But we'll never solve it if we don't look at the problem head on.
And now with the glaciers specifically, what are some things that you think we need to know that either one, we don't, or maybe like adults like myself, like we learn a lot of this stuff in school and then we get out of school for 10, 15 years and, you know, we forget. I mean, we just don't know anymore. So what are the things that adults need to know about glaciers in particular, kids too?
We all forget, you know, we forget our earth science pretty quick. A glacier isn't just a big pile of snow. And I was lucky enough to actually walk on a glacier. And there's a sense of like sort of getting onto the back of this big frozen creature almost. It's moving very, very slowly. It makes noise. It's filled with life. There's a real sense that it's a living thing, even though it isn't, but it's part of a very living ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So because it's not just snow, it's millennia, thousands of years of ice packed together, and something like 3/4 of the fresh water on our planet is locked up in ice. Mm-hmm. So as it melts, that's going to become of great interest to people in the not too distant future. I mean, we're already reading headlines about cities without water, rivers drying up. I mean, it's happening now.
And so if they continue to melt at the rate that they are, what happens?
Well, the changes are subtle at first, but now we're starting to feel them more in increased storms, fires, droughts, torrential downpours, rising sea levels. I mean, it was interesting to me. I was researching a tropical island, and I've been lucky enough to go to some tropical islands in the South Seas that are only a few feet above sea level. There are islands that people used to live on that people don't live on anymore because they're underwater. So things are changing. And it's not just for people who live right near the glaciers. It's all over the world.
Do you think that it would take for people to really pay attention, like a major city to go under? Or are you hopeful that, I mean, I say that because how many coastal cities are there? I mean, just here in the United States, the whole Eastern Seaboard is is, you know, city after city. And
yeah,
I just feel like a lot of times we don't learn our lesson until it's too late for something. And then we're like, oh, we need to figure this out.
Yeah, my little town got major flooded in Hurricane Irene. It was interesting. In 2019, there was really attention was beginning to be paid. There was I mentioned in my book, there was a day in Greenland when the temperature spiked and 11 billion tons of ice was lost from a glacier in one day. Mm. And 2019 was the year that those dreadful fires in Australia started. A billion animals lost their lives in these dreadful fires caused by the extreme drought. So people were really beginning to pay attention. And then 2020, what happened?
Pandemic.
Right. And, you know, we were all trying to, you know, like not die. So that became the big global story. And it's only now as the pandemic's easing up that people are beginning to turn their attention to it again. But that really cost us momentum. You know, it got onto the back burner instead of being on the front burner. But it's particularly for young people, it's an issue that they're really going to need to pay attention to in the not very distant future.
Speaking of the pandemic, I don't know how much of this is real or not, but I remember at the beginning of the pandemic when everybody was literally locked in their houses, you saw pictures of, you know, Venice, Italy's water clearing up and these little things. I don't know how real any of those things were, but it seemed to have done the environment of some good if we all just sat home a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. You know, global emissions went down because nobody was driving cars. There were a lot of one of the hidden blessings of the pandemic was people really started valuing the outdoors. You know, you couldn't assemble in a mall. So people would walk on nature trails and go to nature centers and arboretums, and membership of, you know, the local land conservancies skyrocketed, and people began to really value nature. And I think that's the first step towards being an environmental activist, is falling in love with nature. Most of my books are not about faraway places. They're about the kind of nature that you find in your backyard, because I want to have kids have a direct hands-on contact with nature. I have a book about dandelions. I literally have a book about mud puddles and all the wildlife that use mud puddles. So I want people to have more of a connection with nature, because we'll only bother saving those things that we really care about.
Do you find that younger people now are having more of a connection to nature than, say, my generation? Because I feel like they kind of do. I feel like this generation of young people is, I'm 44. I feel like they care a lot more about a lot of issues than, say, I did when I was in my 20s.
I think so. Partly it's, you know, part of one of the good things about social media, a lot of bad things about it. One of the good things about it is we see pictures of melting glaciers and starving polar bears on shrinking icebergs. We really see it in our daily, you know, scrolling on Twitter or whatever. But I don't think it's true that kids these days are more connected to nature. I think they're connected to it through screens, maybe through books, through pictures, through TV. But the kids spend less and less time in the outdoors. I mean, I used to wander out the backyard and say, you know,
right,
bye, Mom, back for dinner, and wander around in the forest. The forest I wandered around in is a housing development today. So yeah. I find when I take kids out for like after school programs or whatever, just walking into a wooded area, getting off the mowed lawn, they're scared. It's terrifying. They're blown away by it. And then they begin to realize how exciting it is.
Yeah. And I think there's a push among some younger people to do things that, you know, a lot of things that I feel like Native Americans were originally teaching, you know what I mean? Get sunlight, get rest, eat healthier, do all of these things. And I mean, I was eating fast food 3 times a day when I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not a good way to start your life.
I was really interested to research Native American traditions about glaciers. In the Pacific Northwest, where indigenous people lived with glaciers close up, there were many traditions and legends about that glaciers could hear what you said, and they didn't like arrogant people. They needed to be respected, and they enjoyed music. The sense of glaciers were alive, and we needed to respect them. And I think that's something that we should take from indigenous traditions, that when you don't respect nature, there's a price to pay.
Yeah, nature's going to get the last laugh.
Yeah, that's sure. Right. Nature bats last. Yeah.
Don't piss nature off. I did see something in the notes here that a 5,000-year-old mummy was found in one of these glaciers, and I thought that was super interesting. So I wanted to ask you about that. Tell that story.
Yeah, I've looked into his face, and it's really amazing. You can see this 5,000-year-old man, and he was found with an arrowhead embedded in his back, so we know he was shot by somebody, but we don't know all the story. Archaeologists are one of the, you know, the few groups of people who are, you know, getting something good out of glaciers melting, because it's like a giant refrigerator defrosting, and there's amazing things embedded in the ice that are coming to light. And this body was found in the Italian Dolomites, the mountains, and they thought it was a murder victim. And they started trying to, you know, chip him out of the ice and figure out who he was. And then they realized he was 5,000 years old. He's now in a museum, so you can go, and he's in a giant refrigerator. You have to look through this little window to look in through the refrigerator to see his face.
Wow. Do we think more of that will come as they continue to dig these sites? Or are we hoping that doesn't happen, because we want the ice to stay, you know, impacted and make it hard on them?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we'd hope there won't be so much melting, but yeah, they're finding, you know, woolly mammoths, all kinds of amazing things are surfacing as the ice melts. So that's, you know, we do learn a little bit more about our past. Yeah, Otzi is the name of the Iceman. And there's a lot of great kids' books about Otzi. But yeah, it was really interesting. I traveled to Italy to see that that museum. That was really fun.
Yeah, it's always fun to travel to Italy, no matter what it is.
Yeah, right. Can't go wrong there.
never a harsh trip. As far as glaciers are concerned, what are some things that we can do in our everyday lives to kind of help impact climate change?
Well, there's really two levels. One is, you know, those lifestyle changes, you know, change the light bulbs, drive a hybrid car, eat local, shop local, things like that. The other thing I think that we all really need to focus on is voting, getting out the vote. Mm-hmm. Because if we vote for candidates, whether they're on national level or on our town board, that are interested in preserving the environment, preserving green space, open space, banning plastic bags in local town stores, right up to voting in presidential elections. Voting really matters. Next year, 23, there'll be really low voter turnout because, you know, no big election.
Right.
But, you know, in my little town, there's no public transportation. You know, you got to take your car. You can't take a bus. The budget was cut for public transportation. But if we can elect candidates that will put buses back in the town, we'll cut our carbon emissions. So a lot of it is voting. And that's where I think kids can really be helpful. Kids can be advocates in the family for voting, for figuring out, you know, where your polling place is, when early voting is, all those things. You know, we're just coming off an election year and we're all like, oh my God, I don't want to hear about elections.
Yeah, right. Stop the voting.
But, you know, starting next year, the volunteer work I do is not with environmental issues. I volunteer for different, like, get out the vote organizations.
That's nice. I remember I live in Tennessee, in Nashville, and we took a family vacation to California over the holidays. And I remember we went to, you know, the grocery store or whatever, and you can't get plastic bags out there. They're like, they'll charge you if you need to buy bags. And you're like, oh, I get it. Like, this is better than what we do in Tennessee, which is everybody gets as many plastic bags as you want. And
yeah. You buy a pack of cigarettes and they put it in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
My town too. And it's that comes from voting. That comes from electing candidates that will vote for that kind of bill. I mean, yes, we can all make individual choices, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of Tennessee people bring their reusable bags to the grocery store, but, you know, a lot don't. Let's face it, we're all busy and, you know, it's so easy to forget your reusable bag. But if it's a state law or a town law, there ain't
a little bit different. Yeah, it's a little bit different when you know that there's a, you know, we use reusable bags as much as we can, but if I have to stop, you know, if my wife's like, hey, pick up some broccoli on your way home, I don't have a reusable bag with me. Maybe I do if that's a law. Maybe I just, and I'm just coming up with this idea, like literally as we speak now. So I should keep a reusable bag in my car at all times. And I'll start doing that. But like, maybe I would have done that earlier had that been a law, had I had to pay for plastic bags. So I agree.
You know, I never want to be the person saying, oh, no, bad, 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 shaming people who use plastic bags. We don't have to make plastic out of petroleum. We have the technology, it exists right now, to make plastic out of corn cobs, out of sawdust, out of seaweed. Yeah. We can make plastic that is biodegradable, that It'll decompose in your compost pile, or that will dissolve when water hits it. It doesn't have to be the problem that it is. What we have to do, and then what I'm trying to encourage young people to do, is to think of ways we can use technology to do it better. So we don't have to ban plastic bags. Let's make better plastic bags that are biodegradable.
I use biodegradable plastic bags to pick up my dog. I buy them at the pet store to pick up my dog's poop. And I'm like, why aren't all plastic bags like this? Why is it just the ones that are picking up my dogs?
Because they're more expensive. At the moment, it costs more to make the biodegradable stuff, or to make the stuff out of seaweed or orange peels or whatever. But if that's how we can sort of vote with our pocketbooks, if we pay the extra bit to buy the biodegradable stuff, the price will come down.
Yeah.
So there could be a time when we just don't have petroleum plastic anymore, because the petroleum plastic doesn't decompose for millennia, for years. And, the sad stories of whales with their stomachs full of plastic waste. It doesn't have to happen. We can make plastic that will, dissolve in the ocean.
And there you have it. The book is Meltdown: Discover Earth's Irreplaceable Glaciers and Learn What You Can Do to Save Them. Anita Sanchez, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Anita Sanchez. Make sure you check out our book, Meltdown: Discover Earth's Irreplaceable Glaciers and Learn What You Can Do to Save Them. And make sure you follow me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter as well, at DolaWhite101, DolaWhite101. Brand new episode drops next week. I definitely appreciate you checking out the podcast. Make sure if they let you rate and review, you do so, as long as you're saying nice things about me. Back at it next week. Brand new episode. Thank you for listening.